Podcast brought to you by Athletes on the Rise. Nowadays, athletes need to develop in multiple ways to obtain college scholarships and professional contracts. Athletes on the Rise will do just that. AOTR uses multidisciplinary sports science knowledge to develop complete athletes mentally, physically, technically, and tactically. We go above and beyond what is expected to give athletes a training experience that is tailored to the individual. We constantly push our athletes outside their comfort zones, and we make sure that athletes are doing the right things in the right way to maximize their development. Athletes on the Rise, training redefined. Follow us online, ask us questions, read our content. Our website is http://aotr.training. Find us on Instagram at aotr.training, Twitter at aotr_training, and facebook.com/aotr.training. When I first decided to start up this podcast, our next guest was one of the first people that came to my mind, and she did not disappoint. Today's guest is Coach Heather Stewart, who is known for her ability to create championship cultures at both the high school and collegiate levels. She has consistently taken over unsuccessful losing programs and turned them into programs that compete for championships many times in their first season. She knows how to turn things around. Her track record of success has not gone unnoticed, as she is also a regional coordinator for USA Youth Development and a youth camp coach for the Golden State Warriors and at the prestigious Snow Valley Basketball School. She is also part of the Positive Coaching Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to creating better athletes by improving the culture of sports programs. In this podcast, we will talk about what a championship culture is and how it is developed. Keen in on the processes that coaches, players, parents, and sporting organizations need to go through to make the culture championship caliber. So as always, be ready to learn. Here we go. Rise Up Podcast. This is Coach Eric from Athletes on the Rise here with my friend and coach, Heather Stewart. Heather, how are you doing today?
I'm fantastic. How are you doing, Coach?
I'm doing pretty well out here in Chicago. Heather's out in California enjoying the nice warm weather. I'm here having snow. So we're in different time zones, different weather forecasts here. So, but we're going to jump right into it. Heather is, if you want to, think of her as anything outside of a coach, is a culture expert. She has gone into numerous environments and taken teams that have literally won zero games, if or very few, and turned them into championship type contenders. So she really knows how to turn around programs. And so, you know, no matter what level you're at, I think this is going to be something that's going to be very, very helpful for you. So we're going to dive right in. Heather, in your own words, I mean, what's the definition of a championship culture?
Well, generally, I think that championship culture starts with understanding your why. So it's about understanding how we do things here and why we do them. And so I think the sooner mm-hmm. that you can establish that, then yeah, that's going to get you your culture very quickly.
Mm-hmm. And why is it important?
Well, I think if you don't know who you are or where you want to go, you're going to be pretty lost in the process. So I think it's just like any roadmap, whether it be in sports or basketball or business or life. I think it's really important mm-hmm. to have that roadmap. So that's the importance of it, is just you have to know where you're going and why you're going, and then create the roadmap for your culture.
Right. And so why do you feel like some people might not have as much of an emphasis on it, or may not be able to create it in the ways that are going to best, you know, be most conducive to the success of the team?
I think a lot of, I would say personally, as a new coach, my philosophies were a little bit different just because I kind of repeated what I learned from other coaches. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a part of it, is why, you know, that's kind of what other coaches have learned from their coaches. And I just think sometimes the emphasis is much more on, you know, the scoreboard and the winning, rather than developing mm-hmm. the culture and not realizing how much that culture impacts the scoreboard. that roadmap to the scoreboard. I always say we don't worry about the scoreboard. The scoreboard takes care of itself if we control the controllables, mm-hmm. and that's really what our culture is.
Yep, exactly. So yeah, so how do you go about creating it?
Well, it's really, we have to start at the beginning. And like I said, it's a start with understanding who you are, why you coach, why it's important to you. That has evolved in myself over the years. When I first started coaching, it was really just about, I love the game. I came from winning programs. I'd gone through ups and downs, in the multiple programs that I'd been in as a player. And I really knew that, I wanted to win, and that's why I started. I loved coaching. That was it. I didn't know anything about culture. I didn't know anything about, investing in the players. So I think understanding the evolution of myself as a coach too, as I've progressed and worked with different organizations, is how I've come to be where I am now. So I think knowing who you are, but I think more importantly, starting with understanding who your athletes are. I think you have to understand at multiple levels, because I've coached all the way from AAU fifth graders all the way through the collegiate level. Worked with former players that are now playing overseas professionally. And the biggest thing is understanding why the kids are playing. You're going to have, especially at the youth levels, which is going to be, your youngest levels up through high school, is what we call the youth levels. And all those kids are playing for different reasons. So you have to know why you're coaching, and you have to know why they're playing. And I think that's where you have to start with your culture.
So how do you figure out who your athletes are? What does that process look like?
Well, I think having open dialogue and being transparent. I think there's definitely processes of getting that on paper and having your one-on-one meetings. We do one-on-ones at the beginning of the year. We have check-ins midway through. We have end of the season. But I think sitting down and really asking them, why do you play? What's the reason that you're here? And you're going to find a big range of answers. And I think your ability to coach to those different answers is what creates the culture and the opportunity to be successful at each of those different levels for each of those players.
Mm-hmm. And so that's the beginning for the kids, but how did you go about figuring out who you are as a coach? I mean, what was that process like? It's an open dialogue with the kids, but what did you have to go through to figure out, hey, this is what I stand for. This is my philosophies. And this is what I believe in.
Well, I had to get it wrong a lot.
Right.
I think
right.
That's, first of all, I took it back to who am I as a player, and how did I want to be coached, and how did I want to be communicated with? And I was one of those players that, I would run through brick walls. I would do whatever I had to do to be successful. But I did like a pat on the back every now and then. I didn't need to be babied, but I did like to be appreciated. And so as a player, I kind of learned that. And then I went through periods of having different types of coaches. And for me, I learned a lot of my coaching philosophies on what I liked and what I didn't like from my right. coaches. So I think every single coach that you've ever had, whether you've liked them or not liked them, there's a lesson in that interaction with them. So I took a lot from some of the coaches that I didn't like what they did. And then the ones that I did. So I think going through, I'm now in my 21st year of coaching. But I think also connecting with different organizations and having mentors and working with the Positive Coaching Alliance, working with USA Basketball, working with the Warriors staff, I think having right. a lot of those connections, really starts to kind of frame who you are going to be as a coach. And I think, my evolution came mostly when I figured out, that it wasn't necessarily about the game. That it was about the players. And when the process changed, really was when I started doing a lot of work with Positive Coaching Alliance, when I started doing just a lot of self-reflection of why, in the beginning, we were winning, but kids weren't necessarily smiling and having fun. Like, how can we change this? So it was a lot of self-reflection and looking in the mirror and saying, I have to do better. This isn't working. Or what can I do better? And I think the process of doing that is also having conversations with the kids to say and be vulnerable as a coach mm-hmm. and say, what can I do better? Where can I fix this?
Right. And so within that though, there's always that spectrum, right? Because you have young kids who necessarily don't know how to verbalize some of those motions or how to verbalize specific things that they like or don't like about the coaching style. You know, I've on my end, whether it be myself or I've seen some other coaches, you know, some of the responses they'll get from kids when you ask them that question, you know, how do you want to be coached? How, you know, they're like, you're doing fine. Yeah. You know, what can I do better? You're doing great. So how do you go about kind of probing to kind of, even though they might not be able to verbalize it, you're able to create kind of a more of an understanding of, you know, hey, this is what works for this kid. This is not what works.
Right. Well, I think in terms of just your own feedback from athletes, I think if you make it anonymous, you're going to get more honesty. So, you know, one of the things, you do a questionnaire at the end of the season or the beginning of the season and just say, you know, what do you expect from your coaches? What are the things that you would like to get out of the season? And then, you know, at the end of the season, also having a questionnaire of being, again, anonymous, where the kids can freely give feedback. And then it's about the coach, not then turning and directing anything specifically at athletes. But then that's when you go into self-reflection mode and with you and your staff and go, how can we do this and serve them better? With the individual players, you can't really get them to open and be honest with you until they establish trust. And I think that the way to establish trust with them is, again, vulnerability, but they also need to know that you actually care. They need to know that you're invested in them. The biggest thing that kids will see right away is if you're fake, if you're trying to be something you're not, if you are saying you care about them, but your actions are different than your words. And some of the ways to show you care is, you know who they are, get to know who their family is, get to know what they're interested in outside of basketball. You know, get to know their hobbies, go support them. If you have multiple sport athletes, which I strongly encourage, go watch them in their other sports, you know, really invest in who they are as a kid. And then once you start to get, you know, a relationship formed in that way, then they start to be really a lot more honest about the communication. And the other thing is having someone on your team too, who is willing to be that dialogue in between the coaches and the players. So whether that be a captain or whether that just be someone that you know, it has a good relationship with both, where you can kind of get kind of the heartbeat of what's going on your team through that player. And then they can communicate and then you can make adjustments based on the feedback that you're getting.
Gotcha. No, I think that's a super important point. And like you said, those aren't all things that can necessarily be done over time, right away, but over time, you're going to be able to notice that kid that can kind of relate to both ends and you start to build that trust. There's those leadership characteristics, and they're able to give you a little bit more of that feedback. That kid that can kind of get along with a lot of the kids, they can kind of keep their ear to the ground, so to speak. And they can be straight up with you rather than, you know, sugarcoating things or just, you know, getting too emotionally invested one way or the other. I think those are a lot of really good key points. So coming off of that, so we've talked a little bit about, okay, forming your identity as a coach and figuring out how the players tick, so to speak. Going off of that, how do you then, what are the cornerstones of a championship culture? And, you know, why is it important to establish those cornerstones, or, you know, those specific ways of doing things?
Well, first and foremost, I think that you have to establish it day one. And whether that be in your summer workouts, whether that be, you know, going into spring, you can still change it as, you know, if this is a change that you want to make in your program. But if you're coming into a new program and, you know, I love programs in peril. I love to rebuild. I love to turn things into successful programs. It's kind of what I've always done and what I enjoy doing. And I think that the biggest thing that I found is, like, when you walk in the door with day one, you have to set the expectations. You have to say, this is how we're going to do things here. And I think that is the key of a mission statement, is this is how we're going to do it here. And then it's consistency. So I think you really have to be consistent. I think you have to be very aware. I think you have to be honest with yourself of, am I letting this kid get away with things because they're a little bit better? Or am I holding everybody accountable? Are we holding each other accountable? And I think the best thing about programs, once you start to develop and build them, is that there's less coach-player accountability and there's more player-player accountability. My strongest belief is that as I start to develop a program, my goal is to have that first year group trained. As I come in that first year, I want them to understand, this is how we do things. This is the expectation. This is the pace. This is the sense of urgency. These are the details. And then when new players come in, I let them know they're responsible for making sure that that new group coming in understands the culture of our program. And so that then that holds them a little bit more of accountable. They feel like they're in a little bit more of a leadership role model role. And so they step up their game so that they've, so that they're able to model that for the ones coming in.
Right.
So that's you start for sure.
Yeah. So, but you touch on a really key point that I think is also very misrepresented and misunderstood when it comes to accountability, you know, and how you're able to hold one another accountable. Cause there's, on my end, I've seen people try to hold one another accountability, but they do it in a way within the group that is not necessarily accepted. So how do you develop that player, and even coach player accountability that is not just honest, but also, you know, respectful and done in a way that is going to reinforce the values of the culture?
That's a fantastic question, because I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with. And it's something that initially I struggled with as well. I think first and foremost, it's really more about you have to show it by example as a coach. So I believe in sweat equity. And by sweat equity, I mean, like, we get on the court, we do things, you know, with them, we show them how it's supposed to look. I think a lot of times we tell kids how to do things and we don't show them. I think it's important to show them. So getting out there and first demonstrating what it looks like, or having assistant coaches or someone on staff that can, is important to do that. And then I think for the accountability portion, it's, you know, you can do it in a respectful way where it's just set to a certain tone. So, you know, I learned from Coach Don Showalter, one of the biggest takeaways I took from him was, you know, I don't repeat myself. So he says, tell them once and make them figure it out. I think oftentimes we overcoach, we overfix things as coaches. And so we don't let kids figure things out for themselves. And so I love that what he says about that is hold them accountable for figuring things out. So once you start to step back as a coach, it's interesting to watch the players actually figure it out for themselves. So for example, if there's a drill and you're saying, and you've got a ton of kids in the gym and you're just like, hey, I want 10 lines of equal numbers, figure it out. And you don't start putting them in lines and you don't start moving people around and they have to figure it out for themselves. Now they start to become accountable in a different way. They're accountable just for setting something up. And I think if you can get them to where they're accountable for little things like that, and then again, like for pace and sense of urgency, is if you don't see it, if it's not being done the way that you like it or you want it, you stop it. And you can either say, look, that's not how we do things here. If you establish your verbiage in your program, and ours is, you know, that's not how we do things here. So, you know, we can either fix it or you can go home. And if you go home, just don't expect to play, right? It's really easy. So I think having conversations and dialogue about, like, these are the expectations, but then holding them to it. And then once they hold each other and have those conversations with each other in terms of accountability, it's got to be done in a respectful way. So I don't want my players yelling at each other. I don't want my players overcoaching each other. That's my job. I more or less want them holding each other accountable on effort. I want them holding each other accountable on communication, on kind of the detail things. And then if you have a teammate that's struggling, like figuring plays out or figuring out schematics, having maybe one of those players partner with someone who's struggling, and then they can shadow them to walk them through. And so
right.
Giving them responsibility to do that. So I think there's a lot of different ways, and those are just a few, that you can start to build accountability.
Right. So going back to where were you? Holding accountable for little things. I'm taking notes as we go along here. So yeah. There's a specific question that I wanted. So let's, okay, that's one piece that I wanted to speak to was the, you know, you'll teach things once and then let them figure that out. So does that go for like everything? Like, hey, we're going to run, you know, five out and we're going to do our little three-man game and we're just working on pass and cut, right? And this is, you know, this is where we have to do. These are the small details we're focused on. Okay, divide up, go. And then just let them figure it out. And then if they're not doing it right, still just let them do it? Or is there a process when it comes to some of those learning aspects where you'll actually kind of go back and re-demonstrate, et cetera?
Yeah, I think I always I'll stop them, but I'll stop them in snippets. So I don't want to have a long conversation with them in the middle of a drill because you're going to lose their interest. Mm-hmm. So if there's a quick correction that needs to be made, you might play pull a player out that's struggling with it and fix it with that player, and make sure everyone's paying attention. Or you might pull a player out that's doing it really well, or one of each, and just say, okay, this is what we're struggling with. This is the point of emphasis. Fix it now. Because sometimes I think some of the kids, you have to know who your kids are in terms of their learning style. So some are visual, some are, you know, audio, some are kinesthetic. You have to know who they are. So I think one of the biggest correction things you can do if someone's struggling with it is grab a kinesthetic learner and teach them and show them first. And then make those quick corrections and then back to the drill. In literally, I mean, 30-second correction. It does not have to be a long, drawn out. You're going to lose their interest and they want to keep moving. Right. So a quick correction, but I don't want to keep doing the same correction over and over again. So if I see they're struggling with something that is very specific, we might have to break it down even further. So rather than giving them this mass drill of cut pass, you know, make this entry. So I might even break it down to, we're just going to work on the skill set, and I'm huge on fundamentals. Right. So we might just on a one breakdown drill where I'm just showing the footwork, and that's all we're doing. Forget the ball, forget the upper body. We're just going to break down the footwork. So if you have kids struggling with what you're teaching, break it down to its simplest form and build it. I always say from the bottom up. Right. So start with the feet.
Well, I think those are also, again, really key points. And that's something that I found myself over the years progressing to is a really big piece is just, like you said, just taking away the basketball, like take it down to the bare bones. Hey, this is how you're supposed to move. This is where you're supposed to go. You know, and I'd like to look at it from a viewpoint of like skill layering, like every single thing that you do, there's a layer of skill, and you have to find that specific piece that's going to challenge them, but at the same time, allow them to progress so you can take that next step and layer on the next skill.
Yeah. I love the skill layering concept. That's great. And I think the biggest thing too, is once they get a skill is celebrate it. You know, and I think once they can do something that they couldn't do before, like you're hyping them up for that. You're encouraging them. You want them to feel excited about the learning process. So, you know, you have a kid who, you know, couldn't two ball drill 2 weeks ago and they've been putting work into it. Now they've got that two ball crossover and you're just like jumping up and down, like, you know, and hyping them up. Right. And I think that's something that they don't get enough of, because as coaches, we're constantly trying to fix things rather than celebrate to get right. So I think having a nice combination of both is super important. But I love the skill layering concept.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks. Okay, so within your building the culture, mm-hmm. Something that I feel also comes out that is super important is just that the communication, like you said. So not just with the athletes, but then, you know, the rest of the coaching staff, the administration, the parents. Can you just talk to, you know, what that role of communication is and how you go about communicating with those different entities, so everybody understands how everyone else is on the same page, or absolutely, getting everyone on the same page.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because the word communication is such a simple word, but it's so difficult in terms of every, not just in basketball, but in relationships and, you know, businesses. Communication, I think, is one of the biggest areas of building your program. And for me, when I'm either interviewing for a job or I'm going in, the first thing my conversations are with the athletic director. Because my plan is to come in and do it differently. You know, if I'm rebuilding a program, there's going to be a lot of changes in terms of expectations. So the players are going to have something different. The parents are going to have something different, and I have high expectations. So I really push. And so I need to know from day one, is my athletic director going to support me? So if I have this parent go to him and start complaining about, well, my kid's complaining the practices are too hard, or that they're not getting playing time, or that they're this kid's playing ahead of them, or whatever. I need to know my athletic director has full trust in me. So the communication for me has to start right there in the interview process. And if I don't feel like I'm going to be supported by administration, I don't think that's the right fit for me. And that's not to say that I don't think, if, you know, if there were ever anything that I did, that I should be held accountable. But I, you know, I know myself as a coach. I know that I'm always going to do it the right way. And I just need to know that, number one, my AD supports me. And then when it comes to the players, and, well, let's go right to staff, actually. I truly think that finding the right fit of staff makeup around you. And if you're coaching, you know, at the high school level, that's your freshman team or your JV team or the varsity. I think those programs should be a collective unit. So I think all the coaches have to be talking the same language. I think we all have to be on the same page of understanding what is our culture. What do our expectations look like? What are some of the words that we're using? So we're all saying the same things. And then also giving them the opportunity to run the same system, but maybe on a kind of a lower down level for the lower teams.
Right.
And then taking up. But I think it starts with your staff. You have to have constant communication with your staff. You have to make sure we're all on the same page, that we're all supporting each other. And, you know, I've had some situations where it wasn't a good fit, where I've had assistant coaches where, you know, they were kind of built into the program. They kind of came with the program.
And right.
I had to make some changes because we were not speaking the same language. And you cannot have a united program and culture if your staff isn't that way. So you have to start with your staff all being on the same page. And as a head coach, I think it's really important to invest in delegating to your staff because you have to make them also feel valuable. So making sure that your staff is involved in the building of the culture, the building of the program, you're pumping up your assistants as a head coach. And making sure that your players will respect them. Because if you're communicating that way to them and in front of your players with respect, then that'll be the communication that those players will have with those coaches as well. And then when it comes to parents, you know, we do a very beginning of the season, we do a parent meeting, like most programs. And I have a, you know, PowerPoint, and I have, you know, everything pretty much mapped out in terms of this is how we're going to do things. These are our expectations. You know, I let parents know right from the top that, you know, it's not at the varsity level. You know, we're not all playing the same minutes. It's not going to be fair in terms of equality in minutes. And then understanding what our role is. And I think the biggest thing communicating with parents is getting them to stop paying attention to the scoreboard. That is a hard one. Because we're so tuned in to our society of being, you're not successful unless you win. And by win, it has to be on the scoreboard. But when you're rebuilding a program and reestablishing culture, a win might be that, you know, we cut down our turnovers that game. That might be a win for us as we're starting out. It might be a win that we communicated in help side. It might be a win that everybody blocked out. So we have, you know, our hustle chart. And so right at the beginning of the season, I project these are the stats that we keep. And it's not how many points you scored. It's not, you know, the number of assists, the number of rebounds. It's things like how many deflections, how many times did we get on the floor for loose balls? How many high fives did we give each other? You know, how many times were we in help side? Did we help the helper? So communicating what we want and what we're looking for to the parents, I think is very important to get them on board. And while you're doing that to the parents, because the players are in that meeting as well, they're also hearing and seeing, okay, everybody knows what we're looking for. And, you know, if you have a parent, and we've probably all had these parents that sits in the stands and takes stats on everybody else's kids or your kids or their kids and are comparing, you know, give that parent a stat of high fives. You know, have them count how many high fives every player had, and start to take their focus away from that. So I think communicating clearly that way to them is really important. And then that just falls in line to the players. The players, we want to make sure that if we're communicating that this is what's important to us, that's what we're emphasizing. So during a game, we'll stat that. All of those little things. And at the end of the game, we have hustle points. And so after every game, we really emphasize, like, yeah, you scored 4 points, but man, you had like 25 hustle points. This is amazing. And then really giving them that. And so when you start doing those things, the communicating what you want, how you want it, celebrating when they get it, you know, and that we're all communicating the same message is I think key. So again, it's a kind of a broad look at what communication is our team, but, you know, it starts with the AD, parents, staff, you know, players. So,
right.
And it's constant. It has to be constant and consistent. I mean,
so going into some of those relationships that you have to balance with within that structure. So say, hey, you know, we're emphasizing these hustle points, we're emphasizing these pieces, but then let's say you get a parent that comes up and says, hey, you know, my daughter, you know, she got all these hustle points, but they didn't get more playing time. Why is that? You know, how do you balance that where like, well, he or she may not be as talented, and we value obviously these contributions that she's given to the program, but you know, we have other kids that are also serving other roles within that. How do you navigate that landscape?
Yeah, great question. I think communicating the roles is important. I think even if you have to bring the parents into that meeting when you're sitting down with the players at the beginning of the season, going, this is the role that I see for you. And I think we don't do that enough, is establishing the roles. And I think you have to do that with your staff and your players. So I think if you establish the role and say, this is where I see you. I see you maybe getting right now where you are. I see you getting minimum minutes, but in your role, I want to see you. Your job is just to block out every time. And if you block out every time, I always say, take care of your minutes. So whatever minutes you get, take care of them. Don't give me a reason to pull you out, because that's how you earn more minutes. So right. You know, you can work your butt off in practices. You can, and you know, earn those then. I have a player, and I'll tell you a quick story about a young lady named Destiny who is on my team this year. And she was a senior this year. I just went back to high school. I was at the college level for the last 5 years. I was asked to come back and reestablish the culture at the high school. So I came back this year. And this young lady was cut from the team last year, from the JV team as a junior. She was cut. And when I came in this year, we started summer workouts. And this kid was the first one at every workout. She was the last one to leave. She walked to practice every day in the summer. I actually called her my culture kid, because she did everything that I wanted in my culture. She worked hard. She was selfless. She was a great teammate. She encouraged everyone else. She stepped out of her comfort zone because everything was hard for her, because she wasn't very talented. So everything was hard for her, but she never gave up. So in the beginning of the season, I told my coaches, I said, there's no way I'm cutting this kid. I'm not cutting her, because this is the kind of person that I want on my team, regardless of her skill set. But what I did do in the beginning, when we had the tryouts, is we pulled her in and I told her, I said, you know, Destiny, I said, there's a conversation I want to have with you. I said, because I love who you are as a person. I love how hard you work. I love all of those things about you. Said, but obviously your skill sets are lacking in several areas. And I said, and to be quite transparent, there's a good chance you're not going to get a lot of minutes this season, but I would love to have you on the team. Now you can choose to be our team manager, which means you'll be around this team all the time. You'll be at practices, you'll be helping us out, or you can choose to be on the roster knowing that you're not going to get a lot of minutes. And if you can earn more during the season, fantastic. Great. You know, it's up to you.
Right.
And it took her about 30 seconds to go, oh no, I'm going to earn more time. And I said, that's why I love you. You know, this is why I love you, Destiny.
Right.
Destiny ended up, there was probably several games in the beginning of the season where she never got on the court. She was great on the bench. She was a good cheerleader. When there were opportunities to get her in, I would. And what she did is she started to really earn it in practice. So in practices, I had to figure out what her strengths and weaknesses were. Destiny's not a scorer. I learned that. Destiny's not a ball handler. I learned that. But what Destiny could do was defend. Once she figured out which side of the player to be on, right? So she had to figure out what side of the basket to be on. So once she figured that out, I was like, okay, now we want to be on the basket.
Yeah, exactly.
We had to start there. But once she got that, man, that was a tough kid. She just wanted to fight, like in terms of just her aggression. She was like, I'm going to lock you down, or if you go, I'm going to go. And she ended up, she actually ended up starting the last four games of our season, which was playoffs.
Yeah.
And I told her, I'm like, Destiny, you know, all throughout, she was the kid that I always, in conversations with, being her selflessness. And, you know, she was the one I referred to the team to just say, listen, you got a player here who barely got any minutes. She didn't complain. She didn't whine. She just earned it. And that's how we do it. And so kids started to understand and see that she was being rewarded for those things. So I think having that open dialogue and communication with her in the beginning would set that question to the parent saying, well, hey, my kid is doing this. Well, if your kid is truly earning that time and truly getting better and putting the time in on their own,
right,
and they're going to earn it eventually. It doesn't mean they're going to be given it, but I think you have to communicate right. that at the very beginning of you may not get a lot of minutes, and that's a hard conversation to have. And a parent may not like that conversation, but I think the more honest you are in the beginning, the less pressure there is as a coach to say, well, this is why. So if a parent comes to me in that situation, hey, we had this conversation, are they taking care of their minutes when they're on the court? And if they're taking care of their minutes, for me personally, you're going to earn more.
You're right. Within that, so let's say we can use, Destiny as an example as well. Let's say you had the conversation with her, you had a conversation with the parents, and was there any point in time, or have you as a coach had this point in time where the parents or the player would be like, well, what do I have to do in order to earn the playing time? What do I have to do to be on the court? And do you give specific answers? Like, do you go into some of those details, or is that one of those things you don't want to like touch because then that can be something that is kind of put back at you?
No, I absolutely love that question. And I'd actually rather them ask, what can I do to get better versus, why am I not playing? It's the same question, but phrased differently. And that's what parents sometimes don't understand is,
right.
if you understand there are areas your kid can grow and get better, because I think sometimes parents have blinders on to their kids' abilities.
Right.
So I think sometimes just you have to be kind of honest in terms of these are your kids' areas where they're struggling. So no, I will definitely, I love that question. I love when a kid comes to me and says, what do I need to do? And I think it's important as a coach that you've paid enough attention to that player. And if they're not playing in games, you need to be paying attention to them in a practice setting. And then having conversations with them directly and then with the parents, if that's necessary.
Right.
I will have a kid come to me and go, hey, coach, I'm only getting, this game, I'm only getting, half the time that I want to get, and maybe their goal is only 15 minutes, but they're only getting 5 or whatever. And so how can I get more? And so I will tell them very specifically. And I think that's where the understanding what the role is, because I don't need every kid. I need every kid to have a role. I had a kid that I would sub in only when I really needed big rebounds, because I knew she would block out. I'd under the basket on free throws, I could use her. So there are certain things I'd say, but I need to see this consistently and I need to see it in practice before I can trust you to do it in games. But I can't trust you to do it in a practice setting. Or if you're not going to go 100% in a practice setting, I can't trust you in a game to do that. So giving them very specifics, and that might just be like, hey, I don't care what else is going on. I want to see you block out every time the ball goes up. Let me see that in a practice. Mm-hmm. And if I see that in a practice, then I know I can use you for that role in a game. So I think getting them to understand very specifics, I think you have to break it down for them. I don't think you can just say, hey, be better, be stronger, be faster. I think you have to give them specifics of where they can actually see the progression, and then also give them opportunity in those skill sets to progress. So don't just tell them without giving them the skill sets that they need. And that may be saying, hey, here's a couple of things you can do at home to work on this.
So let's, and in some examples, I mean, like, especially at some of the younger levels, you'll have some of those kids that are, they might need more than just the one thing. And there's a whole base that has to be developed, but you can see that they're good kids and they want to work. So, I would view sometimes when you get some kids, you say, hey, okay, I want to be able to do this. And then, okay, you're starting to see them do better, but they're still, there's still these other things that where you put them on court that they might be some type of liability. Two questions. I mean, one, how do you get them to understand that even though you're doing some of, this one thing, there's other things you have to be able to do. And on the flip side is, how do you make sure that you're allowing them to have the chance to be successful when they are able to get on the court?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the errors that we make as coaches is that we'll put our lower level kids in together, because we're trying to figure out how to get them playing time. So, you know, I tend to put in a kid that's struggling with maybe three or four other really good players. And that kind of helps them out, number one. But I also think that if there's a you know, a specific skill set that they're struggling with, that we, you know, we really communicate through that. I always say, let your positives outweigh your negatives, right? So we talk about positives and negatives a lot. So, like, you know, turnover is obviously a negative. You dove on the floor for a loose ball, that's positive. You blocked out, that's positive. And so my thing is, we're all going to make mistakes on the court. I expect every one of my kids to make mistakes. It's no one plays a
perfect. Exactly.
It doesn't happen. Exactly. And I think they have to understand that. And I will say that's probably the biggest thing in all of my workshops with athletes. That is their biggest, their biggest area where it stunts their ability to perform is their fear of failure. And I think once you give them permission to fail a little bit, it helps them grow. So, you know, the kid who can do some things well, but not other things well, I think it's okay to say, look, I expect you to make mistakes, but let's not have our negatives outweigh our positives. As long as our positives outweigh our negatives, we're okay. Now, when you start to become a liability in that there's more negatives than positives, we have to take you off the court, right? We have to take you off, because now that's a detriment to the team, right? And it's a detriment to you, because you're not progressing in this moment. So we need to go back and make sure that our positives that were outweighing our negatives in practice setting first again. So I always say it's a couple things, take care of your minutes, and then your positives have to outweigh your negatives. And as long as they do that, again, that's how you earn your minutes. And then putting them in with, you know, players who can support them. You don't want two players in that can't pass to each other, because neither of them can pass and neither of them can catch. So, you know, putting them in a situation to succeed where, you know, you're putting them in with supportive players. And it's, you have to be creative as a coach. You have to figure out, you know, sometimes I'll even start a kid with that's not one of my stronger kids. And I think that's another thing too, parents, about is my starting lineup changes all the time. And I don't care who starts a game. I want people who can finish. So if your goal is to start a game and you have parents, you're going to have parents yelling and screaming at you about, you know, my kid should be starting. And my answer to that is like, okay, you know, I can shut that parent up. Your kid will start. But as soon as that ball is tipped, I've got someone subbing in at the bench. So at the table. So your kid started, congratulations. Right. But that's not important.
Right.
You know,
there you go. Right. No, it is. Exactly. Because
to me, that's, the start is irrelevant. Obviously you want to put, you know, a strong unit on the court to start the game. But for me, I always tell my kids and in our culture, I want finishers. So your goal is not to start. Your goal is to be one of those kids that in a close game with 5 minutes to play, I know I can count on you to do your job, right? Whatever that job is, whatever your role is, I can count on you to do your job that we need in that situation. So that we may need a really good defensive stance. And I know we have some kids that can play good defense. I may need scoring, whatever it may be. Don't worry about being a starter. I want finishers. So I think that's a big one for me.
Okay. No, I really like how you, the verbiage that you use as well, as far as, hey, positive outweighing the negative, and when those negatives outweigh the positive, then that's, you know, that's when we have to kind of take you off the court, because it's a detriment to the team. And although it might be a little bit of a shot to the ego, so to speak, and I think that especially younger kids can take that type of verbiage better rather than, well, you're not playing well, or you turn the ball over. But hey, when you're looking at the grand scheme of things, hey, this is what was happening. And if you get the opportunity to come back out on the court, hey, we got to make sure you do these couple of things, for sure.
I think that's why you use your assistants too. I'm sorry. I think it's important I think it's important to use your assistants in that situation too. Yeah. When you have a kid that comes off the court, I always have a coach that they come sit next to.
100%
agree. And that coach coaches them up as they come off the court, because you can't do it all as the head coach. So utilizing your staff and my
you
staff
get other have things to see. Yep.
Yeah, they all have their roles. So my coaches all have their roles as well. And, you know, one's sitting off when the kid subs off, another one's got stats, another one's got something else. So they all have their roles, but I think really coaching them up in that instance. And I'm not going to take a kid off for one mistake. It's just when we make multiple mistakes, now we got to make corrections.
Right. No, and that's, I 100% agree with that. I mean, that was one of my what was it? It's like 4 or 5 years ago when I was over in Europe, and I was working as an assistant coach as well. And they were setting, it was the first time I'd been exposed to like the behind the scenes European culture and how everything was so structured. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the key points was, hey, yeah, when they come off the court, you know, give them the compliment sandwich, so to speak. Hey, you're doing this well, we got to make sure you work on this. But overall, you know, these were things that were going really well, you know, be ready to get back on the court, you know, those type of things. And then you got the other person doing the hustle stats, so to speak. And it draws emphasis, you know, it gives the kids the feedback. It gets you to kind of get into their heads where they're at in the game. And it allows you to really continue to reinforce that culture of the things that you're really looking for. So I think those are all, you know, super, super important points to, you know, for coaches that are looking to try to make some changes to make sure you give those responsibilities and then follow up on them as well. I mean, hold the coaches accountable. Like, hey, he came off the court. You didn't do anything. Like, I can't be organizing 3, 4, 5 different things. My eyes are on the court. This is your job to be able to do these things as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will even give a coach subbing duties depending on, you know, I have one coach has been with me for a lot of years. I actually coached her as a player, and then she's been my assistant coach with every program I've been to. So, I'm coaching her up. I'm mentoring her because I want her someday to be a head coach and to run her programs. So like, I trust her to look at subs and give, you know, some rotation looks. Right. I think that's super important too. But speaking on the European system, I think one of the things that we can do a little bit better here is what they do there in terms of developing fundamentals and skill set. Our culture is huge. My team culture is huge on, I don't develop positions. I develop players, right. You know, so every player in our program learns every skill set. So I don't care if you're a 6'2" and for the girls, 6'2" is tall, right? So I don't care if you're a 6'2" post player, you're calling yourself a post player. Like, you're going to learn ball handling, 2-ball. You're going to learn how to guard the perimeter. You're going to learn how to guard 100%. The post. I don't care if you're a 4-foot guard, you're going to learn how to bend in the post, and because you're going to get posted up. Right. You know, I think every player needs to learn every skill set. So ball handling, passing, shooting, everything, defensively, especially. I love defense. That's my go-to. And I really, you know, defensively, if we can all learn how to guard everybody, then on the team. So I think we can do a lot better here as coaches in terms of not stereotyping a kid into, okay, you're tall at the youth level. Like, okay, you're a big kid, so I'm going to teach you how to be a post player. I think we need to take that big kid from every skill set, just like we need to give the little kids every single skill set, because you never know how these kids can develop and blossom and grow.
Exactly. And within that, I mean, we could go down the skill development path. You know, I love talking those things, but, you know, especially,
that's what you do,
you know, with every kid should have like some sort of go-to kind of on each position on the floor. So you should have that, especially when you're young, have that one post move and its counter, you know, something on the perimeter with your different triple threat things. Got to be able to pass and finish with the right and left hand and dribble with the right and left in your simple, you know, dribble moves. And I like also like how you said, you know, being able to guard multiple positions because that, again, that was another thing when I was playing overseas that kind of, as I kind of went up through the ranks, one of the last programs I played for, all of a sudden, you know, I was we had our fives guarding our ones and then twos on the fours. And because our system was going to be switching everything.
Yeah.
And we needed our bigs to be able to guard things. So, you know, you had the big zigzag in the guards and back and forth. And then, so when you get into those games, it's not anything new. It's like, no, this is our standard. You're playing at arm's length away, you pressure, you move your feet. And so when it becomes like, okay, you're going to come out, you're switching, like you're used to doing those things and you're used to guarding that speed and you're used to that different tempo. Because all those, again, all those small details, if you don't get the reps in practice and if you aren't efficient in practice, you're not going to be able to do it in games.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what kids struggled with too, you know, we talked about, you know, knowing your moves, knowing your counters, having a go-to, but I think what we don't teach enough or we don't ask enough, I will say that one of my biggest development of culture is I changed from being a coach who tells to a coach who asks, because I think that really develops their IQ. So you like teaching them a move or a counter move and then saying, when and why would we use this? Right. And I think kids are so, I want to say robotic, right? Because we've gone through years and years of systematic play where this is the play you run. And if that kid doesn't know where the screen is supposed to be set, they don't know what to do with themselves. So they've forgotten how to play basketball. They don't know. They never learned how to play basketball. They learned how to run a play. And I think we need to get back to that, right? You get back to teaching them just how to play basketball. And I think that goes to understanding when to step back from talking all the time as coaches into asking questions. So every skill set we do, I say, why would we run this play? When would we run this? And I always have different people answering questions so that people are learning and the IQ is growing. I think you have to grow the IQ in your program. And again, that's where that whole culture thing comes in terms of people being invested and buying in. If they start to feel smarter, you know, they start to understand the game more. Right. And, you know, as we've gotten older, the game slows down. Right. Because we can see everything happening. We know it's good. We can anticipate. We're not reacting. So I think if you can start developing that in your teams at a younger age, as soon as you get them, you start asking questions. So I stopped talking and started asking. And I think their input and their voices are super important in that.
Yeah. And I at the youngest levels, I think that's important as well. Just to, again, I like to use the term getting them cognitively involved, because if it's just, you know, you get it all day in school, that the constant, like, all right, do this. So it's just like, okay, whatever, you know, kids zone out. But as soon as you start asking them questions, you know, the first thing you get is that blank stare in the face.
Oh, yeah.
Like, wait, what?
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
I have to answer? Wait,
well, I have to figure out something for myself? Wait a minute. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, on my end as well, as I've talked to some of the youth teams in the area here, hey, yeah, we're going to run this box set. We're going to run this. And I'm like, teach them concepts teach them the skills within the concepts. And you right now, you know, you might not win. That's fine. But over time, these are the kids that are going to pass them by, because they're going to understand how to play and not just run sets. They're going to understand gaps. They're going to understand, you know, what angles and why and where they need to get to, rather than, because even on my end, I'm sure you had a similar experience, you know, growing up in the grade school, high school, it was all just boom, 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 boom. All of a sudden I got to college and they had this completely kind of open motion type system. I was like, wait, what? We have to make our own decisions.
Yeah.
You know, and even when I was playing pickup, like I struggled during pickup games because I didn't understand the flow. I didn't understand how people were playing because it wasn't like that rigid structure.
Yeah. And for me, I'm opposite. So I grew up learning how to play by playing pickup. So I grew up at the park. That's how I played park ball. It was usually me and about 30 guys. And, you know, I had to, earn the respect. I had to learn and be smart about, okay, they're bigger, faster, stronger. So how do I involve myself on this? How do I keep myself on the court? I definitely think that, you know, we've created a system of robots, and I think we need to get away from that and just have a combination. I think you have to have a combination. I think you have to have kids teach them, you know, just how to read the game. We do a lot of read and react motions and actions and teaching them, you know, how to read the back doors, all of those things. But then also you have to teach kids how to run plays, because I think there's some kids that just, they struggle with plays. And so I think it's important to have a nice combination of both. Yeah.
Yep. Definitely. All right. So we kind of went down the skills path with the overview of how that kind of is involved within your culture. Let's let's kind of bring that to back to the center point. And one of the other questions I want to ask is, within your experience, you know, what have been some of the biggest difficulties in creating a culture and maintaining it? Like, what, you know, coming in, you have, we talked about establishing from day one, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what's, you know, what are some of the biggest difficulties you faced throughout that process?
That's a big one.
There are so many.
Yeah, there are a lot. There are a lot. But I will say that I would say the majority of the issues, and this is before I really learned, and this is kind of as I won't say younger coach, but even in the last probably 7-8 years, I've really evolved. But before that, I think the biggest detriment is that I used to be in the mindset of, like, I don't do parents. I don't talk to parents. Like, I'm focused on kids. That's all I want to do. Yep. And we got to a place, you know, in one of my programs where it was the apple in the tree, you know, the problems were coming to the court because of what was being communicated by the parents. And, you know, I didn't, in the beginning, I didn't really understand how to establish the communication with the parents. And I think that that's been a big kind of growth area for me in terms of managing parents. It really does start at home. I think that having the same communication, I'll just put it this way. I think I've learned, number one, I can't fix everybody. And number two, I can't fix in 2 hours in a gym setting what a kid is getting for an entire lifetime from parents at home. And there, I've had players on my team who have been enabled at home, have been allowed to act a certain way, who have been, gotten away with everything. And then I bring them into the court and I say, you can't do that. You can't do that. You can't do that. And then the parents then say, well, I'm being too hard on their kid, where I'm just holding them to actual accountability. So I think one of the biggest struggles I had and have had is just managing the parents. And I think I've done a lot better job of that, having the skill sets and the tools kind of that I learned from Positive Coaching Alliance and, having those upfront conversations. And like we talked about, dialogue and communication. That's been the biggest thing. I think when it comes to the kids, for the most part, they all want to be there. I think it's hard when you get 2 or 3 kids on the same team with the parents that are difficult parents. And I walked away from high school because I was in that situation. And that's when I went to college and I started coaching college because I just needed a break. I needed a break from the parents and the apples that were coming from the trees. I just needed a little break. I needed to reestablish myself and refuel myself. And I loved working with the college kids, but I knew I could make a bigger impact at the high school level just because you're getting them younger. So I would say that's the biggest challenge. Getting parents to understand. I think the way I did that again was reestablishing what our goals are. What are we paying attention to? And I don't think I communicated that very well several years ago. I think that's something I've gotten better. So, those hustle points, these is what we're looking for. Mm-hmm. Stop looking at the scoreboard. That'll take care of itself. Right. That's been the big hurdle for me, is just managing those relationships.
Right. And within that, as you're managing, the relationships with the parents, how do you go about, because you have the meetings in the beginning, middle, end with the athletes, is that something you do with the parents there the entire time? And then are there other ways that you're communicating with parents throughout the year? How are you able to effectively manage that throughout a season?
Yeah. So if there's something where I'm having an issue with, or I see a player struggling with something in terms of they're getting upset or they're coming in with a bad attitude or they're frustrated, I'll call a parent in. I've never been called into a meeting by parents. So like my athletic director has never been like, hey, I have a parent. Yeah. I've actually called the meeting. So I've been like, hey, we need to come in and have a meeting. So we've got some issues. So I've called several of those. So having a parent coming in, the other thing that I will do that's a little unorthodox is I'll invite, because a lot of coaches have closed practice sessions. But if there's a kid that's, that the parent doesn't understand why they're not playing and why they're not this, well, usually it's because they don't see what's going on in practice. They don't see that they're, giving half effort. They don't see they're not being great teammates. They don't see that they're not paying attention. So I'll invite that parent into practice. And I'll have that parent come to practice, say, you don't get to say anything, but I want you to observe. And then I want to have a conversation with you afterwards. Now, if you come to practice and your kid is a whole different kid in practice than they have been, look, I want you to come every day, right? Because this is a changed behavior. And obviously the parent's not going to do that, but then they start to say, oh, okay, well, I start to understand now because I'm seeing it differently, or this is different.
Right.
So I think just having that open dialogue, and then even after games, I'll go over and, whether win or lose, I'll go over and shake parents' hands. Yeah. I'll go over and say hello. I'll go over and check in on them and see how they're doing. And that's not something I used to do as a coach. I was out the door. I didn't want anything to do with parents. And so now we're opening myself up a little bit, showing them I'm human. I have a family. I have kids that are athletes that compete at high levels, and kind of making myself a little bit more vulnerable to them, but still, you still have to keep, I think, a line. I think that's important too, because you can have, I have a couple players on my team now who I've known them since they were little and I know the parents very well, but there's still that line that I have to keep as a coach.
So I do that. So how do you, because after games, you know, there can be a lot of emotions, you know, win, lose, et cetera, but especially after losses, things can be a little tense sometimes. So how are you still able to like have that communication with parents, but then at the same time, not allow those negative things that can happen because of emotions? You know, how do you set the standard and how do you enforce that?
We have a 24-hour rule. So if there's, you know, anything that you're upset about, angry about, you know, you're irritated about, whether it's I'm upset with you or you're upset with me or there's players upset, we have that 24-hour rule where it's, you got to sleep on it. If it's important to you the next day, give me a call. We'll sit down. We'll talk about it. We'll have a meeting. So that, you know, we know, and I've had the situation where I've had a parent come up and start to talk. I say, whoa, you know, let's honor our 24-hour rule. If you go to bed tonight, you sleep on it. Let's talk about it tomorrow. Give me a call. I'm more than happy to sit down and have a conversation. Let's do that. But, you know, I think really establishing that in the beginning is important for everything to stay healthy in the culture. I think you have to, because I don't want anybody reacting out of emotion. I would rather, if it's as important to you tomorrow, then absolutely let's sit down and talk about it. Because if it's important to you, it's important to me. So let's talk it out.
Exactly. All right. So we're right around an hour here. Do you have another like 5-10 minutes, or do we have to kind of get rolling here?
No, I'm good.
All right. Cool. Just want to be sure. All right. So in your experience, when you're coming in, what is apparent when something is, you know, part of a poor performance culture, as an example, rather than a championship culture? What things happen that are red flags, so to speak, that coaches need to be aware of? That hey, that we need to be able to like. We need to change this.
I think one of the biggest things is effort. So you'll see kid kind of, you'll come into a program and you'll see kids kind of just half go through things. they think that's okay. Or you have kids that are, you know, late to classes, or not showing up to classes. You know, we monitor all of that. So I have one coach that's just in charge of academics. So her job is to get, you know, weekly progress reports, see if we're being tardy, see if we're showing up on time. Because when you walk into a program, you find a lot of times with the unsuccessful ones that those things aren't happening. Kids are just kind of just not involved. They don't care. There's no accountability. So I think effort is a big one, whether it's in the classroom or on the court. I think another thing you see is you see a lot of selfishness. So you'll see athletes that are just concerned about themselves and their progress and their stats and getting that player to play outside of themselves and give them bigger challenges and making their teammates better. I think that's an area that you see a lot. And then I think also disconnected staffs. So you see a lot of staff on different pages. You see a lot of inner kind of talk at each other, undefined roles. And then, you know, maybe just kids that just don't like each other and because they really haven't learned how to get along yet.
Okay. And how do you know on the flip side, how do you know when your culture is strong and resilient? Like what sticks out on the opposite end? And like, hey, our culture is in a pretty good place right now.
Because I think we can win or lose. And that's the thing is like, we can win or lose and you can't tell the difference. I think that's a strong culture. I think that, you know, when the kids walk off the court, you know, they can be up. I'm probably one of the most competitive people you'll ever meet. I hate to lose, but I don't let it define me. And I think, you know, when the kids can get mad and they can get frustrated about losing, but they can still love and respect one another. You definitely will see that in winning cultures. You will see a lot of communication in winning cultures. You will walk in a gym and people will be just, you know, whether it's on-court communication, whether it's cheering from the baseline, when we're doing those things and we don't have to tell them as coaches, hey, let's cheer from the baseline. If you're not in the drill, we're cheering.
Right.
You don't have to do that. And everyone is invested in that. That's how you know you're doing something right. When you have kids that are ending practice dripping in sweat, you know you're doing something right, right? Because if they're working that hard, they don't have time to complain about everything else.
Yeah.
you don't have time to complain when you're sweating.
Yeah.
So,
exactly. When you're that tired,
you start to see those things. And then you have kids that want to come back. I think it's an important question to ask at the end of the season. Like, are you planning on coming back next season? And if not, why? Right. And that can be part of the anonymous questions, if you like. But I think it's important to understand, do they want to come back? Because if they have kids that want to come back, and then kids that are also at the high school or youth levels recruiting other friends to play, because then you know that you're bringing people into something that they really like. When you start seeing that, you know you're doing something right. And the other thing too, and this is kind of an external feedback thing, is you actually have other coaches and other teams and officials go, man, I just love the way your team plays. And that, to me, that's the biggest compliment. Whether we win or lose, when I hear someone talk about our team and just say, I just love the way your team plays. I just love the way they're with each other. I love how connected they are. I love the energy. To me, the bench energy is huge. We have, that's a stat on our thing, is we grade our bench every single game. So if our bench is not getting A's, then we have a problem. I don't care who's on the bench. That bench needs to be getting A's. But when you get people come up to you and go, wow, like, we just really love watching your team. That to me, it means you've got your culture established. You're doing okay.
So let's say, for example, your team didn't get an A for you know, a couple of games. You know, if they're at that C, D level, I mean, what do you do to help improve that? I'm sure there's no one quick answer, and it's a process of things. But is there anything that jumps out of you of like, well, how do we remedy this, so to speak? I'm sure.
Yeah.
What's your viewpoint?
Well, I think the biggest thing is you can't let it get there. Right. So when we talk about in the beginning of holding each other accountable from day one, and having the energy level and the expectations, is, you know, when we talk about afterwards, after each game, we talk about those things. And so, like, say, you know, a bad game for us might be a C, where the bench is a C level, or our energy on the court is a C. Like, for us, to us, that's a fail. If we get down to that level, then usually what happens if our bench and our energy is that level, the scoreboard shows that. Right. So I don't necessarily have to say a lot. I'll just say, okay, let's see how the two are connected. So where was our bench energy today? Right. Where was our court energy today? Okay. Now let's look at our scoreboard. And usually, again, they match up. So, you know, we can say, okay, so if we are going to be more successful and we're going to support each other and we're going to succeed, what do we have to do? And again, it's asking questions. What do we have to do? And they come up with we have to be more engaged. Okay. So who's going to do it? Right. And then it's, again, putting it on them. So I think that's the thing right away, is catching them. Don't let it be a 3 or 4 game, you know, stint where that's happening, because that's usually happening in practice if it's going to happen in the game. So you got to stop it in practice. You got to bring the energy up in practice. And I think if there's no energy or accountability, I'm okay with, you know, like, you know, we have, if we're not going to do it right, we're not going to do it. So we can spend time, you know, having a track practice, or we can spend time, you know, just working on defensive. Hey, we're going to play defense this entire practice, right? We're not even touch a ball. We're going to do is defense today. And they're like, oh man, you know, they don't realize they're actually getting better, but then they all want to touch a ball. So I think a ball is a good reward for them. So when the energy is where I want it, I'll do that. Or if I see they're struggling a little bit, I use music a lot in practice. So we have our sound system plugged in every day, and they have to earn their music. So if I like the energy, I'll turn the music on. Now, if the energy gets where I don't like it, I'll turn the music off. And so I don't have to say anything, but then if that music gets turned off, I'm not happy. You know, I'm not happy with their energy. And then they're like trying to earn their music back. So things like that.
Interesting. What are some signs that you'll see? So we talked about the two ends of the spectrum. What signs will pop out to you to show, like, hey, the culture is starting to change, like, you know, in a good way? So let's say you're coming in, you're taking over a program, and it's you've started to lay the ground rules and so on and so forth. What is going to start to happen when you start to see that culture is going in the right direction?
I think one of the bigger things is I have to talk less. I start to see them communicate with each other more. When I start to see them starting to talk to each other, that's when I'm seeing that transition starting to happen. When I see more smiles, I know it's starting to change. When I see a maybe selfish player make the extra pass, And then for me, it's important to celebrate those things. So I may pull that player aside and say in that, right as soon as that play finishes, I'll say, hey, come here. And I'll say, man, I am so impressed with that pass you just made. That was the right pass. That was a great job. So like little things. And then they want to do it more because they want that feedback. So when you start to see the things that you saw as a bad culture, when you start to see little progressions like that change, you know you're headed in the right direction.
Okay. No, that, I think that's super, super important as well. Cause I mean, there's so many quantifiable things you could do, but sometimes you have to see those qualities like jump out. So you can be like, you know what, you know, we're putting in the work. It's not where we want to be. But it's making progress in the right direction. So you're speaking from a perspective, a lot of times right now you go into programs and you change things around, but what about for some of those coaches who might be, you know, 3, 4, 5 years in, and you know it's a pretty bad culture. How do you then like jump into the next year and actually make that change? Like, what is it following the same guidelines? Are there different things that those coaches that have to do that have been kind of tenured? You know, is there any differences within that process?
Yeah, I think that's the hardest one to do is when you've been in a program and you've been doing it a certain way, and now all of a sudden you're going to do it differently. I think that's mm-hmm. hard. But I think for those coaches that have kind of been doing it the same way for a long time, I think one, they have to figure out what isn't working and why hasn't it been working for so long. I think that they definitely have to, again, whether it's a new season, I think everything is a refresh. So maybe they've been there right. 4 years and this is their fifth year, right? And they want to change it this year. Mm-hmm. It has to start right when the workout starts. So the tryout start. And also having more than one voice, I think, is important too, having your assistant coaches involved. But I think that you can establish it right then. Like, yep, this is what we've done. And you know what? It hasn't worked for us. So this is what we're going to do now. And this is going to be the expectation moving forward. And I think that's the bigger thing is just really kind of, it's like hitting that reset button. And you have to do it right from the beginning of the season. I don't think you can do it mid-season. It just doesn't happen. If you all of a sudden mid-season, you want to start implementing this new thing, then that's where you're going to struggle. But I think if you can go into
right.
the beginning of a season and say, this is what it's going to be, I'm going to stay consistent in it. We're all on the same page as the staff. We're going to hold each other accountable. I think even with a program that you've been in a few years, you can turn it around. But you can't be wishy-washy. You can't be like, well, we can't wait to stay. And then, you know. It's like parenting. Like they're gonna do whatever right. they can get away with. They'll get away with it, right? But if you're consistent,
right.
And they know what they can get away with. They know when you're gonna waver, or you're gonna let them slide a little bit. And you just have to be super consistent. And I think that's the hardest part, is just staying that way. But you can do it. You can
right.
3, 4 years in. You can turn it around. But you gotta yep. do it at the beginning of class or summer workout.
So let's get into like some super specific situations. So as an example, let's say you have that really talented kid, like that kid that, I mean, he's head and shoulders above everybody else, but you know, he has that attitude. He doesn't want to work hard. He doesn't want to kind of interact with his teammates. You know, at some point in time, if you're coaching, you get that kid, like how, you know, what has to happen, to be able to change that mindset. And I know, like you said before, not everyone can be saved, so to speak, but mm-hmm. you know, how have you been able to be successful with those type of situations?
Well, I think the first thing I like to do with the kids that think they're better than everybody else, or that generally skill set wise are, is I'll put them right into a drill that I know they're going to fail. I'll challenge them right off the bat. So I'll put them into something. I can see they can do certain things well, but I know that they struggle with this particular skill set. So I'll put them in a drill where I know they're going to struggle. And then I'll pull them aside, right, and have a conversation and say, you know what? I see that you're struggling with this, but with hard work and determination, this skill set is going to make you an even better player. And then I'll say, now look at your teammates. Look, if you start trusting them learning in their process, like you're going to learn this skill set for you. Now they're going to start learning and growing, and it's only going to help you in your game if your teammates are better. So how can you invest in your teammates to make them better? Is there someone, if you're really good at the skill set, can you go work with that kid on that skill set? That makes them better, right? So I think challenging them and humbling them right away is important. And then giving them more of a, hey, I believe in you. I think that you can, the great, and I'll talk about the greats. You know, the greats aren't just about themselves. They're about making the team better. And how can you do that? I want you to come to me and give me a list of how you can make your teammates better. And so I'll give them assignments like that. So I'll say, yeah, obviously you can do these things and your teammates can't. But I also think it's important to challenge those kids. So when you're teaching drills or you're working on ball handling or you're working on skill sets, I'll change the drill depending on the skill set. So say we're doing ball handling. And I have some kids who can barely dribble one ball, right? I have some kids that are decent at two balls. And I tell them you're going to lose it, whatever, I don't care. But this kid's pretty good at two ball. So I'll say, okay, well, you're going to do it with your eyes closed. Okay, everyone else can do it with one ball. You guys have it with two balls, but you're going to do two ball with your eyes closed. So I think it's important to keep challenging them so they don't feel like they're just, you know, they're just kind of above
there everything. To there. Exactly. Exactly.
And they want to continue to feel challenged because they don't want to feel pulled back by their teammates. So if you don't want to feel pulled back, how can you bring them up? So give me a list of ways that you can help that kid or your teammate get better. And then let's do it together. I got you. Let's go.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, I've never thought of that piece before as far as like give me a list of how you can make your teammates better. That'd be I'm sure you've gotten some interesting responses with that. Have you ever had to like guide them down a certain path?
Well, you know, I think that it's kind of like that whole thing we were talking about how we're kids have been told what to do forever and ever, that they can't think for themselves. I think the first thing that I see is like that blank stare, like they have no clue. So, you know, sometimes they'll write like one thing down and then I'll just start probing. Okay, well, they'll say like, you know, you have the teammate that can't catch the ball, right? So they're like, I can help them catch the ball. Okay, well, how will we do that? When can you implement that into your practice? Can you do that outside of practice? So I'll start asking multiple questions in that skill set. But there are, you know, there are kids that can't come up with anything and they're just like, I don't know, or I don't care, you know? And those are the ones where you just kind of have to dive in and say, well, you know, obviously what's important to them is being successful, right? But to that kid, they want to win. They want to be successful. So correlating to how their investment in their teammate makes the team better is making it full circle for them. But there's definitely some answers where you have to probe and you have to kind of, you know, ask the hows and the whys and the whens, and they start to figure it out. Like I said, when you give a kid ownership of something, they become way more invested than if you're just telling them to do something.
Yeah. All right. So I got one more detailed question that came to my mind when I was thinking about some things the other day. So one, you know, in today's world where, you know, sometimes race and sexuality, they can be sensitive topics. So like, how as a coach can you navigate these topics where athletes may be perceived as getting, you know, preferential treatment to do one thing or the other? Is there conversations that you have to like, you know, bring things out into the open and make sure things don't get too, you know, too volatile one way or the other?
I think if I'm understanding your question correctly, I think what is important for us in our our culture is that we don't judge anything or anyone. So, you know, we talk a lot about life lessons. We talk a lot about in our practices, I implement little life lesson moments all throughout, whether it's teaching defense or offense, how does this relate to life? So there are times when, you know, we have conversations or we'll, you know, have dialogue about things like that. And I think the biggest thing, and I like to lead from example, is just that, you know, we are loving and accepting. So we're just here as a family, and in families, you're going to have all sorts of different things. So I don't know if I'm exactly understanding where you're going with your question, but I think, you know, that I just think showing respect is a coach.
Yeah, no, I think respect is a super, obviously a key piece. But let's say, you know, as with outsiders looking in, mm-hmm. you're playing one person over the other person, and maybe there is and maybe they're a different race, so to speak. And sometimes, you know, parents or kids they get these these thought processes of, wow, oh wait, you know, he's favoring this person because of this, or that's kind of the road that I'm going down. So how do you help kind of ease those tensions and make sure that isn't even a consideration?
Yeah, it's interesting because I've actually never had that issue. And I think the reason why, because I've always been so open about, I care about everybody the same. I don't care what gender you are. I don't care what sexuality, what religion. I don't really care. I want to respect you as a person. So I think because I've always spoken to people that regardless, and of course in coaching, you cross everything. So I've had gay players. I've had, you know, we've had transgender, we've had everything. We've had different races, but no one's ever seen me talk to anybody differently because of that. Or heard me speak differently because, I just don't, you know, that to me is irrelevant. I'm dealing with a different person and I want to treat them that way.
Exactly.
And so I think it's never become an issue because they've never seen me have a preferential treatment to anybody depending on anything. So the one thing I do coach differently is goals. And by that, what I mean is when we come in at the beginning of the season and I ask a player, what are your goals for the game? Like, do you want to go play in college? Do you want to go play professionally? What are your goals? So we'll have conversations in groups about which each person's goals are, because I'm going to coach you differently based on your goals versus your gender or your sexuality or your race. So if your goals are this, then I have to be a lot tougher on the details for you than there's maybe, you know, someone else where like they're not using their left hand on that left-handed pass on the left side, where I'll kind of let them slide with that because they're just there because they want to socialize and have fun. I know if you're going to go to college, you have to have that skill set. So I think my players have just generally always seen our staff, and I always make sure my staff is on the same page with me in terms of how we treat and respect one another. That's never, ever, ever been an issue for me, just because they've just never seen, they've never seen that. I don't think you can go to that. Well, you treat them differently because there's nothing they can reference to me for that. It is a problem in a lot of organizations or programs, but I think if you establish that, it just can't be an issue for us because there's nothing to say that would ever happen.
Right. Awesome. Cool. Well, you know, we're getting to the end here. Is there any, in regards to any of the stuff we talked about in regards to, you know, developing culture, winning mentalities, et cetera, any books or documents you would recommend to look into? I know, like, for example, I know PCA has some stuff available to download online, but is there any ones in particular that they should take a look for, any books to read, any authors, et cetera?
Well, I definitely think PCA is a great resource. And if you go to the, you know, positivecoach.org website, you're going to find a lot of free resources in the development zone. That will lead you not just to articles, but they'll lead you to books. There's a lot of things there that you can use. I have a whole library of books and some that I've gotten to and some that I haven't gotten to. But I think everyone's kind of, I think just about every coach on the planet probably has gotten to Wooden. Game Plan for Life. I like that book. But I also, you know, in addition to all the John Gordon stuff, I think he does, you know, a lot of really good work. But also looking in different things. So I have a book called The Soul of Leadership by Deepak Chopra. And so it's like just, you know, little things. And so I think also just reaching outside of just a coaching genre, I think you should just go into like personal self-development or communication books. There's a whole list I'm sure that a lot of people could pull up, I just think definitely pouring into yourselves, or even just like this, listening to podcasts. I think a lot of us are super busy. Obviously right now there's some downtime. But I, as myself, I'm constantly on the road. I'm driving a lot. So I think things like that, like podcasts, I think are incredible resources for coaches. I think getting involved in mentoring groups. So I do Zoom meetings with other coaching groups. I have mentors. And so whether it be books or podcasts or, you know, just going, having a mentor, I just think the biggest thing is continually wanting yourself to grow. Coach Showalter, you know, one of the things he had said, and also one of my favorite coaches, Tate Slock, who's a Snow Valley coach. I coach all the Snow Valley, Iowa camps. But they always, know, they always say, and Coach Locke will tell you, he's been coaching 100 years. but he always says, you know, when you
he's
know
a funny it all, dude.
Yeah, he is hilarious. I absolutely love Coach Locke. But he'll tell you, you know, when you think you know it all, it's time to quit. And so, you know, that's as a player, that's as a coach. You know, you can always, always, always learn and grow. And so no matter what that medium is for you individually as a person or as a coach, like, just continue to grow yourself, be humble, know that you can always get better, step outside of your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. As always, step outside of that comfort zone. That's, yep. That's the only way to get better. You have to do that. Make your mistakes and learn. Absolutely. All right. So, Coach Heather, is there, if people want to reach out to you, if they have any other questions, so on and so forth, is there any way they can get in touch, whether that be, you know, Twitter, IG, email? I mean, do you have a medium that you would prefer if people wanted to reach out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm probably most active just on my Twitter is probably the best resource to get a hold of me.
Okay.
And that's at Coach H. Stewart, Stewart. And then my email address is available, and that's coachh.stewart@gmail.com. I'm available at either of those. But those are probably the two best resources to get a hold of me, and know that I would do my best to get a hold of you. But my weekends are my family time. So
yep.
Friday, I probably won't get you till the next week. So just know that.
Sounds good. So it's at Coach H. Stewart. So there's two H's, CoachHStewart. And then the same thing with the email address, coachh.stewart@gmail. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep. The first one was my Twitter.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Yep. First one was the Twitter. Awesome. Well, thanks a lot, Coach. Appreciate the words of wisdom and all the nuggets and processes that you go through in developing culture. Hopefully this will help out a lot of people who are looking to get better in this area.
Honored to be a guest, and I appreciate you having me on and continue to do the work that you do and spread the love of the game through your podcast and the kids. So appreciate you, Coach.
For sure. Yeah. Thanks, Coach.